Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Good morning. I'll bet you didn't know that medicines are a leading cause of death in North America. Now, I'm not talking about drug abuse. I'm talking about medications, the pursuit of health and the pursuit of remedies. And yet this is something that has received surprisingly little attention. It's actually dangerous often to pursue medications without knowing exactly what is being prescribed and how. So we want to talk more about this phenomenon, and we have a wonderful guest to do that with. Susan Arthur, tell us about our guest.
I am very excited to have our guest on today. We have Dr. James Markham. Now, he is a board-certified cardiologist practicing with the Chattanooga Heart Institute and has been named by USA Today as one of the most influential physicians in his field. He is the director of HeartWise Ministries, and his radio program, HeartWise, airs on more than 500 radio stations across the nation. He has also authored several books, including the book we're discussing today, and listen to this title, Medicines That Kill. Welcome, Dr. Markham.
Thank you, Susan and Joe. It's so nice to be here and talking to your audience. I'm excited about our subject. It's very important we talk about the benefits, the risk of medications. I think people need to know some of these truths that sometimes gets a little bit masked by our modern media.
Well, I mean, certainly you've chosen a title for your latest book, Medicines That Kill. That's sobering. I mean, it captures your attention.
Yeah. Well, I want to build a little bit of framework, Joe, for our audience today. You know, all of us, whether we like it or not, have genes in our body that are bad. You know, we get older. Year in and year out, things get older. And I tell my patients in the office, and I still practice cardiology every week, my specialty is disease reversal. So I still use modern medicine, but I also teach people how to slow down this aging process. But after a while, let's say, Joe, everyone in your family at age 70 had hearing problems, okay? And I yelled in your ear all day long. Well, that stress from me yelling might cause you to lose your hearing at a much earlier age, that stress on your genes. Well, we have stress from many different aspects of our society now that age our genes, and it might be not sleeping well, not drinking enough water, not moving, exercise. It might be food stress. It might be the medicines we're taking. Well, this stress sooner or later causes our genetics. We call this genomic medicine. And Francis Collins sequenced the whole DNA, and that's really where the future of medicine's going, I think. But we can actually tell different things that affect us and it causes problems. The DNA mutates, the telomeres shorten, and sooner or later we develop a symptom. So our genes get stressed, they develop a symptom, and then we go to the doctor and we tell the doctor our symptom, and guess what they do? They offer some type of treatment. Now, there's many different types of treatment that can be offered, but in North America, the most common one that we see is the medication. So that's how it all begins, is that people can understand, well, the medicines are really treating a symptom, not necessarily a cause. Medicines might be contributing to the stress on our genes. There's no medicine that I know that doesn't have a side effect, some of them dangerous side effects. So once a person sort of understands, you know, what the medicine's doing, what it's for, I think that gives them a framework for our discussion today.
So when you use the phrase, the title of your book, Medicines That Kill, in what sense is that primarily true? What is the primary avenue by which this damage is done?
Well, that is a great question, Joe. And I went and looked at all of the data on medications, and I was astounded when I started looking at them and adding up the figures, and I found out that medications hurt people from different avenues. For instance, the largest one we see in the South where I live is medications causing addictions, especially to narcotics. people take narcotics and they don't work as well. They take more and more and more. And eventually this addiction leads to respiratory depression, other physiologic problems, and is actually one of the leading causes of medication killers. So medications can lead to addictions. Medications can also come around because people just don't take the medications correctly. They take too much of something, too little of something. For instance, some people, when they get older, their legs start to swell just because they don't get out of a chair. We call that venous insufficiency. So they might go to a doctor, and a doctor says, well, here, take a fluid pill. These are called diuretics, readily available. These diuretics take fluid out of the body, but if a person's sick and not eating or drinking and they have too much fluid in their body, they could get dehydrated. The dehydration itself could lead to a fall, it could lead to renal failure or something dangerous. So even though the person's taking it for a symptom of edema, they don't fully understand that it could cause dangerous side effects. Many times pharmacies, I looked in pharmacies make mistakes. In the hospital, there's mistakes made with dosages in the patients. Most patients do not even take the medicines as their doctors prescribe it. They don't even understand. I had one patient that came to me one time that was actually had a patch they were supposed to wear, that they were actually swallowing that patch instead of wearing it. They didn't know that was the place on them and not to eat. And right now, we assume that everyone understands all these illicit instructions and side effects, but that's just not true. Most people, you have to keep it very simple, very succinct. So there's mistakes made in prescribing. Then, of course, there's these anaphylactic reactions. Everyone hears of allergies. Well, penicillin and some of the other antibiotics can cause dangerous, life-threatening anaphylactic reactions. So medicines can hurt people from numerous different avenues, and that's why people have to go into taking any medicine, understanding the risk of every medicine and the benefits. And I've been now practicing for almost 30 years, and I see all the medicines that have been pulled off the market because they have dangerous, life-threatening side effects, including bleeding, dangerous heart rhythms, making people think adversely. So medicines aren't without risk.
And yet, the fact is that we're taught that as a culture, it's kind of consistent, you know, with our general expectation that we want what we want and we want it now. And medication seems to be the single direction that allows us to have what we want without making the sacrifices or the pain or unpleasantness that might be its alternative, we believe. And I can see where anything that comes along that is unnatural, I guess, to what your body would normally have expected over many millennia, that it's going to come with side effects. And that and I would also expect that, as you just said, that medicine wouldn't entirely know, doctors and scientists and developers wouldn't entirely know what those things are. And even if they know what they are in the short term, they probably don't know what they are in the long term. Is that safe to say?
That is very safe to say. And then sometimes we've had medicines on the market for 5 or 6 years, and they say, oh, no, it does this. It causes serious GI bleeding, or it causes dementia, or it causes muscle cramps, or it leads to dangerous conditions like metabolic acidosis. We have to pull that from the market. So the medicines come to the market sometimes a little bit too quickly, because the drug companies, they spend billions and billions of dollars developing these chemicals that treat symptoms, and they want to have a return on their investment right away. So they try to get them to the market as quick as they can, and there's a lot of people that work for these companies that are good people, but they're just doing their jobs. And their job is to sell pills and make a profit and get their product out to people. They do that in the media, and the media gets that message out there, and sometimes people don't see the other side. There is some caution that we have to take.
And Dr. James Markham, let me be devil's advocate perhaps here for a moment. And I have friends who are doctors, and I know you see this side much better than I do. But I hear from them this almost, and these are good people, wonderful doctors, but who have developed an almost cynical attitude, I'll say skeptical attitude, about a patient's willingness, you know, to do the hard and difficult, and that patients come with an expectation of them as doctors, and that's that they're going to walk away with this prescription in their hand that's going to provide a relatively simple and quick solution. And I think over time, maybe that skepticism gets to the point where there's just not the effort or the energy or the hope that by sitting down and talking to somebody who is on their way to type 2 diabetes or in fact have it, to emphasize to them, you know, with a proper sense of urgency that, look, you need this dramatic change in lifestyle and this medication I'm giving you is not the answer. I mean, that sort of emphatic in your face sort of appeal that a loved one might give to another family member. You know, doctors just are busy. They have a few minutes for that meeting. They're thinking this person's not going to change anyway. So, look, let me give them a script and send them on their way. Do you think that that's a mentality that's out there?
Yes, Joe. I think that was very well said. You know, we tend as a society to fall into ruts and, you know, oh, these people won't do this, all the chronic diseases. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, to give people some other alternatives to look at. You know, the doctor might not have enough time. Well, maybe this can supplement what your physician is telling you. Maybe this will give you a different path. But if we look at the chronic diseases, hypertension, the new guidelines just came out, 46% of people have hypertension. It's estimated that by mid-century, 1 in 3 will have type 2 diabetes. In the South, where I live, 60% of people have obesity and carry extra weight. Sleep apnea is relevant. Cardiovascular disease is a chronic disease. Cancer is on the rise. So if you look at the evidence, our system is really not a good thing for chronic disease. Medicine's great for getting treatment of acute problems and getting people over the hump, but even when we do a bypass surgery on a patient, I tell them, that didn't take away the problem. The problem is still there. We just treated a symptom and bypassed around it so you feel better. So what I try to tell people, and it's tough, Joe, is when they come in, I say, listen, I love you enough to tell you the truth. And I think people have the right to know the truth, and then they can choose what they want to do. I say, listen, if you want to do this, this is an alternative. Here's some resources. You can learn about this. Maybe you can reverse it. This is the least dangerous thing. If you don't want to do anything right, okay, well, that's okay too, but this is what you might expect. Here's the medicines that might, you know, cause you symptoms. Here's the side effects. Use them carefully and choose which path you want to go on. And that's about all you can do nowadays is give them the information. But I'm finding more and more people, Joe, they know our system's not working. They know there's treatments other than medicines that's available. They know that the system is a money-making system. We spend about one in every $5 now on health care. And we don't have good health care in our country, and we can't afford it anymore. So I think people and systems and insurance companies and governments and informational, they're looking for some truth. They're looking for a new direction. But we have to sort of do it one step at a time. It takes time, just like it took time to get into this. It's going to take time to get out of this. But prolonged exposure to stress causes damage, ages us, creates these symptoms, and prolonged exposures to medicine have its risk.
Well, let's assume then a hypothetical that you have a patient who has come to see you, and let's assume they have those classic signs of creeping type 2 diabetes or whatnot, mm-hmm. maybe some abdominal fat, et cetera. And what would you say to them in terms of giving them a prescription for a longer, healthier life?
Well, the first thing I would do, I would get to know them. I'd say, listen, you know, there's many different ways to handle health care. And, you know, type 2 diabetes is caused usually by too much fat in the body. You have a choice. And we can try to really work one step at a time, and we can give you a program to remove fat from your nutrition. We can remove fat from your diet with some exercise and watch your blood sugars come down, perhaps reverse the disease. Maybe the insulin receptors that are clogged up with fat, you can get those opened up. Or you can take a medicine that doesn't solve the problem, that doesn't fix diabetes, that will not make you live longer, but make the number look good and deal with the side effects. This is your choice. Which would you choose to do? And most people, when you present it in that manner, they say, well, listen, I'm willing to at least take some steps in that direction. I said, well, here's some steps to take. You know, here's some ways you can improve your nutrition. Here's some ways we can add stuff.
You're cutting out, Dr.
Yeah.
You're cutting out a little bit. I wonder if it's maybe your cell reception.
It might be. Let me rotate a little bit to a better location for you guys there. Okay.
Okay.
Is this any better, Joe?
I think it will be.
Yeah, so, that's better.
Okay, great. Great. Okay. So anyway, I give them the choice after I give them the information. I say, listen, you know, this is the way we can solve the problem one step at a time. What would you choose to do? And when you talk to them about the medicines and the side effects and treating the symptoms, and when they understand this framework of aging, most people in my office will say, hey, listen, I think I can eat a few more greens and beans, and maybe I can cut back on the fried foods, and I could start moving around every hour and exercising. And as they do that, they start to feel empowered. You know, I can change my own physiology, at least for chronic disease. I'm not dependent on a system that might not work, even though I understand where it might be beneficial. So it's a lot of it has to do with education, and that's part of the reason I wrote this book. And that's, you know, it is possible for many of the chronic diseases we have to reverse it if we love the people, take them one step at a time, and try not to give them too much at once.
So I wonder how much of this responsibility, though, rests on the shoulders of physicians. I mean, to the extent that they occupy the position of greatest authority in our economy and our culture, which they do, and in the minds mm-hmm. of consumers, then they've undertaken a lot of responsibility, which I think it's difficult for them to discharge when they have patient loads into the thousands per physician.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. It takes time, and it takes systems. And it takes time, but you have to just, I feel frustrated sometimes, but it just takes one patient at a time. And a lot of it's going to fall on the patient as well. You know, they now have resources where they can go to the internet, that can find out information. The doctor is part of it, and we need to stand up and speak out. But right now, our system does not reward physicians for spending time educating people. We don't reward systems that help people get healthy. We don't reward systems. We just, you know, we're just running. You're right. We're running through patients, 10 minutes for a visit, treat the cause. And that's the system that we got into. But that doesn't mean it's right. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to change it, whatever little sphere we have.
Yeah. And I think that message really, it provides the best hope, is one in which people have to assume responsibility. And
yeah.
And they can no longer look to their physician as the primary source of information about their health. And as you point out, you know, physicians deal with illness, not health. And so if people want health, then they should find the resources such as your books and many, many other resources that have come with this digital age to empower and equip themselves to make the right decisions along the way.
You're right, and the service you're providing today to your listeners, you know, this is another step in the right direction. You're giving them another voice, another thing to think about in addition to their doctor's visit. You're providing this as a service, and now with the internet, and there's many ways, but you're right, responsibility, learning more, and then decide, once you have the information, how do you want to live your life? I have some people that will come in, Joe, after the bypass surgery, they'll be age 40. They put terrible genetic stress. They have bad genes. They smoke. They do cigarettes. They don't eat right. And I said, listen, we bypassed you, but we didn't fix the problem. If you don't make some changes, you only got 5 or 6 years to live, and they still won't do anything. And I said, well, you know, even if you don't decide to do anything, you know, I still try to give them hope. I try to plug into their spiritual side. But some people just choose to do that. And you just, as a clinician, as a healer, you just have to accept that. Try to love them the best you can. Give them the truth the best you can. And help them in whatever way they choose to be helped.
Yeah, that was a question I had. Is how many people do you see that are really willing to change? I know people often that go, yeah, I'm going to do that. But when push yeah. comes to shove, they're just really not going to do it. Or they make a tiny change for a little bit, and then they're back to the normal.
Yeah, well, Susan, the people that come to me at the Chattanooga Heart Institute are usually people that have exhausted every different thing. You know, they got 80 to 90% blockages in their arteries. They can't walk across the street because they have chest pain. They have high, you know, they're highly educated, and they want to understand the physiology and how it's changed their genetics. And we have several different reversal programs in heart disease. So either they do it or they die. Those people are highly motivated. Okay, they will do everything. However, there are some that, and I don't see as many of these as I used to, because I'm sort of sub-selecting patients now. They usually come because they want this. You know, they pick me out because of the TV, the radio. They say, listen, I want to have this balance. You know, I want to use medicines when appropriate. I want to use lifestyle and these other changes, including belief systems. But I would say the majority of people will do this if they're educated and you love them and you help them one step at a time. Sometimes we try to do too much. And I have some people said, listen, you eat 21 meals a week. Well, maybe you could eat three of them healthy, you know, and build on that. Maybe you could get out of the chair every hour and walk around and stretch. Maybe you could walk to the mailbox twice a day. Let's start somewhere and grow with that. And that's why I try to plug people into their spiritual side. I said, it's really, I think it's really important that if you have a spiritual basis, that you plug into that higher power to give you power to go beyond society, to go beyond yourself, to do something that you don't think you can do, nor has your culture taught you how to do.
And I know that you come from a Christian perspective in a number of your materials and in your teaching. So speak for a moment to Christian listeners who, you know, who may struggle with the discipline required to make the decisions, and may, many of whom, incidentally, and you know this, notoriously see no connection between their obligations to treat their bodies well and their obligations as Christians. They just, in the South, I would argue, is worse, and I can say that too. I grew up not far north of you on the Kentucky-Tennessee border in Williamsburg, Kentucky. So,
I know Williamsburg very well.
Well, and so you know then, that's kind of an Appalachian perspective, but it's typical much of the South especially. And that's that many of them consider themselves good Christians, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And yet they see no connection between that and their lifestyle and their food.
Right. And that's what I'm trying to educate people. And I tell people, you know, in this healing world, we have a path that we're on. And we have ditches on either side of the path. And one ditch is the side of modern medicine. Modern medicine does all the healing. Well, modern medicine treats the symptoms, but modern medicine in the long run is not going to heal you. And you can't take enough pills or have enough procedures to save you and heal you. The other side of the ditch is, oh, I can do everything healthy. I can eat all the right foods. I can exercise. I can do everything perfect. And that's going to be perfectly healing. So I tell the Christians, no, that's not the path either. That's a ditch you can fall in, even though there's a place for that. The true path, the healing that you want to stay on, very first and foremost, is your relationship with your Creator. Because when you come into that relationship through worship, you are healed. You know, Christ in the New Testament found many people that he healed, but all of them died. In the New Testament, there was like 23 healings. He walked by many people that he could heal. The biblical perspective, he wants your heart forever. Now, when he has your heart and you understand that you have healing right now, the greatest miracle, the greatest prescription is when you accept him as your Savior. And he takes you in the presence of God. And in that, that's where you get your power. You can say, God, show me the truth. Help me to maybe do a little bit better. Help me to maybe drink water or get more rest or do some more. Help me along this walk. Help me to learn. And even if you can't do anything right, that grace makes up for our weaknesses. And that's the joy of the gospel. But I think as I taught people, and I wrote a 7-week Bible study that helps people understand how the physical and spiritual go together. And how they, you know, when we drink water, we want to think about the living water. When we walk outside and get some exercise, we want to think about walking with God. Our Creator is interested in every aspect of his life. But first, he wants our heart in that relationship. And from there, he wants us to be healthy. And he'll give us the power if we're willing to take these steps one step at a time. A lot of Christians and other believers don't really understand that the better we are physically, the better we are spiritually, the happier we're going to be. And, you know, when we do these things, our brain works better. Our anterior cingulate cortex, that part of the brain that communicates with God, grows. our stress chemistry goes down, and all these stressors that I talked about that damages our genes are turned off. And currently, our ministry is working on a study about worship and how just 10 minutes of worship can change your genetics, lower the risk of chronic disease. But in addition to that worship gives people power outside of themselves to see truth and do things one step at a time. The society that we live in is not focused on that. Unfortunately, we're focused on, you know, all these other things in the world that we're too busy. You know, we're too busy with you know, making money, taking care of family, taking care of kids. We're too busy sometimes to see the big picture. So that's what I'm trying to focus people on a little bit more, the big picture, understanding that we all have bad genes. We all need something more than ourselves, and sooner or later, all of our genes are going to get that. How soon that happens depends on all these stressors and these life things we put on us.
And you know, I can see how those who embrace, and not just Christianity, I think, do you find these common denominators, but I think that they're best expressed in Christianity, and that's that you know, there is a design, and that this design comes with certain operating instructions, as you might expect. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that someone is simply complying with the instructions, they're going to end up with a much better result. And I think for people who may come from a more worldly, more secular perspective, for them to approach the goal of health, it seems like a lonely, tough road, and one that holds no real promise at the end. And that's that, you know, you're just delaying this inevitable demise in the fullest sense of the word. And I can see why, under those circumstances, it would be tough to summon up the focus and the motivation to do the things you need to do. Whereas for someone who comes from, for example, a Christian, Judeo-Christian perspective, they see a much bigger picture. And they see a world that has a design and an intention. And as you describe, there are ways that we're to use the body. And when we do it in those ways, we get marvelous results. And you know, things that tie in, like things nobody could have understood when they were practitioners of the religious or Jewish faith many years ago, and now scientists understand, such as, for example, fasting. Who could have foresaw the huge, complicated processes that are triggered with fasting on the body? And you mentioned, you know, worship and its impact on your emotional well-being and your body's health. I mean, who could have understood that even today fully, and yet it is wired into our DNA? Would you say that?
Yes, I would. And now we have the tools with technology to prove it. We have now the proof, you know, proof to show that, you know, we were created a certain way, and when we violate those things, there's genetic things that happen, there's aging things, our telomeres change, and it just gives us evidence base. So occasionally, Joe, I have people that don't have a belief system. And I said, listen, you don't have a belief system, and that's okay. But let me give you some evidence. And why don't you look for God and look for some spirituality and look for it. And here's some ways. And as people have looked for God, he finds them. You know,
yeah. If
people will diligently look for God and look for their belief systems, they will find this. And it's not without evidence. So I add that aspect to the practice of medicine and healing. You know, there's a place for modern medicine to treat symptoms, to get us over the hump, to treat genetic abnormalities that we're born with. But I use the lifestyle thing. But the main thing I want people to understand is there's a higher power that also helps us healing, not only today, but for eternity. And as we plug into that, that gives us the power to see truth and make these changes and know how to adapt to an ever-changing, complex world.
I think one thing that you might be saying is that it's really a comprehensive approach. I mean, there are times when medicine does play a role. You said that earlier, that at times medicine is appropriate. There are times when we need to make changes and do things in our own lives, and then we, of course, tie into the spiritual aspect of it in order to have a more complete health.
That's well said, Susan. You know, if my heart's going too slow because everyone in my family had bad wires in my heart, I'm a pacemaker. You know, if I have a genetic abnormality that modern medicine can help with, yeah, I want help with that. You know, I want help with that. But if I have a chronic disease like diabetes or high blood pressure or obesity or sleep apnea or cardiovascular disease, and there's things that I can do to help with that, I want to do that. And even if I can't do that, I want hope for today and hope for tomorrow in that relationship I have with God to sustain me through that. That relationship itself can slow down this aging process that's occurring.
So
that's exactly right. It's integrated, everything. And the more we learn, Joe, the more I understand, you know, we know very little about major systems of the body. We know very little about how the brain works. You know, the billions and billions of neurons and quadrillion connections. We know very little about the bowel, the interactions in the bowel, and how it makes the chemicals that make us think. We know very little about the flora. We know very little about the immune system. So society as a whole, we have a lot more to learn about this complex physiologic body that we have.
Well, now, if we can, Dr. Markham, Dr. James Markham is with us today, who has... his radio show is on over 500 stations across the nation. He's written several books that have been bestsellers in various forms, and he's an authority on this subject of cardiovascular disease. And Dr. Burt, we're glad you can be with us today. But I want to talk, if we can, a little more specifically about, you know, what would be a prescription, so to speak, in terms of the importance to be assigned physical activity versus a good diet, and if you recommend dieting, how do you come down on that subject? Do you generally recommend, for example, a vegan versus a paleo diet or whatnot? Can you give us some?
We call that nutritional interventions. Okay, and for your audience, a great website to go if they want to learn more about this is nutritionfacts.org. Nutritionfacts.org. That's Dr. Grieger's site, and he has evaluated these with the scientific evidence, and they can look up any food, anything they want and know. But as a practical person, what I tell people, the healthiest diet for people that has been studied and proven is a plant-based diet, okay? That means eating more plants and less of the processed food, the bad stuff. And that's been scientifically proven by books like the China study and different studies. And everyone knows high-fat, high-sodium diets are not good.
Some, though, have heard, you know, Dr. Adkins and others tell them that it's okay to eat biscuits and gravy as long as they stay away from not too many vegetables and plants.
Yeah, and that would not be scientifically proven, okay? Can you lose weight during those diets? Yes, you can. Is it a healthy way to lose weight? The evidence doesn't support that, okay? So the evidence really supports eating more fresh things, you know, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and grains, and less of the processed things, you know, less animals, less fats, less chips, less chicken, less cheese, that. Now, if you can take that, you'll notice that your physiology improves so much that you say, man, this food is not good for me. And if you look at the data, for instance, the average American takes 3,500 milligrams of sodium in a day. We only need 500. Extra sodium raises the blood pressure. A chronic stress causes you to retain fluid. And sooner or later, the high blood pressure damages our vessels, and we have a chronic disease. This prolonged exposure causes a symptom, and then we need modern medicine.
And people are not necessarily reaching for the salt shaker, right? This is embedded in their food.
It's embedded in the food. Chicken, cheese, and chips have tons of salt in them. A breast of chicken that goes for about 1,000 milligrams of salt. We're allowed to inject sodium into chickens, you know, and a chicken has sodium in it. So anyway, but the practical point is, well, how do you get people that have not this, you know, how do you get them there? Okay. Well, I have a comprehensive program where I try to, go to these websites like plantpurenation.com where you can learn about healthier recipes. Maybe you can eat oatmeal one day a week. Maybe you could have a salad 2 days a week. You know, maybe you could try to not eat out as much and just take these steps one at a time. So most people have to go this stepwise approach unless they have terrible symptoms. I saw a guy from Wall Street that had 380% blockages. He couldn't walk 10 steps. He did this for a year, and his blockage of 80 went down to 50% in 1 year just from this plant-based diet, cutting back stress in life, which is also very important, and exercising. So we can reverse disease if people are willing to take these steps one at a time.
And it's surprisingly dramatic how quickly it happens, isn't it, from the time that people start eating correctly?
Yeah. I see people with hemoglobin A1C, normal is less than 6. they come into office with hemoglobin A1C's 12 and get on the right diet and exercise, and they can reverse their type 2 diabetes in as little as 4 to 5 weeks. Mm. Yeah, but the challenge is how do you get people to do this when all of the advertising, all the world, we live in this fast-paced world. You know, everyone is brainwashed that, you know, we have to eat the fast foods, we have to do this, we have to do that. But once you have to sort of love them into it, you know, you have to say, listen, here's the truth. I love you, you know, the truth. Can you take a first step? You know, and that's where I think the spiritual part plays a role, giving them the power to have that ability to take the first step, whether it's drinking water instead of soda pops, or going to bed an hour earlier at night and getting rest, or getting up out of the computer desk and walking around the room every hour, or try to eat oatmeal one day a week instead of Hardee's biscuits and gravy and that every single day. And as they do that, we show them the evidence and the physiology changes, and that really empowers them to say, hey, I can do something more.
But now, in the meantime, do you put them on a drug with, say, for example, your diabetes thing? We see these ads for Victoza and things.
For type 2 diabetes, no.
Okay, so make the changes and go from there.
Yeah, well, some people, it's according to whether they're making insulin in the body. You know, sometimes if you've been a diabetic for years, your pancreas runs out of insulin. And if your pancreas has run out of insulin, you're going to have to take insulin. So sometimes you can go beyond the point of no return. But most people... remember, the diabetic medicines don't make people live longer, okay? They don't fix the problem. They're just treating an overall number. So most people, if they really are dedicated to it, can reverse this. They can reverse diabetes. They can slow down heart disease. All these chronic diseases they can improve with nutrition. But it's not only nutrition. It's more than that. It's exercise, movement. It's mental health. They have to be happy. They have to, you know, have their brain on right. They can't be stressed out all the time, because stress in itself turns on the lower part of the brain, the amygdala, which makes adrenaline and cortisol and inflammation, and it causes our brain not to make good decisions, and that in itself is a dangerous situation. So the stress we're under, the food, all of it works together, Susan, like you said earlier. It's an integrated approach, but it really starts with your brain. If your brain's not into this, the rest of the body's not going to follow.
And incidentally, we still are having a little trouble with the quality of our connection.
Oh, no.
Here. Yeah, and it's in and out, but we hear you. It's just that the quality kind of goes in and out. But
okay, well, we are stormy weather here in Chattanooga, so maybe that will have something to do with it.
That could be.
I'm in a clear area right now, so
okay.
So it might be the storm, and I apologize to our listeners for that. And
well, you can't control.
Nowadays, most people don't have landlines. We don't even have a landline at our house anymore.
I know. Yeah, it's Well, let me bring up this subject, and I think it's kind of implicit in what we're talking about here, is that in this battle between, on the one hand, you know, those forces that, such as yourself and others, who have wonderful information, lots of scientific data, wonderful arguments, and on the other side, arrayed against them, you know, is this a battalion of very smart marketing Madison Avenue trained, highly paid and wonderfully equipped people whose job it is entirely to persuade people through science, through marketing, through whatever they can, to consume these things that you're telling them to not consume. And if I'm standing on the sidelines and trying to bet on which way that this game's going to go, You know, you can see why you could get cynical. You're up against, you know, multi-billion-dollar industries who are founded on the objective of getting people to buy more of those potato chips, to eat more of those processed foods. There aren't billions of dollars to be made in selling broccoli in a raw form. And I think it's a challenge when you're fighting against marketing efforts that are so sophisticated. And they're ubiquitous. I mean, they're on billboards, they're on television. You know, I don't want to sound skeptical, and I know that there's cause for that to some extent, but I do get discouraged when I see these contradictory messages that are being delivered that are 180 degrees from what you're saying.
Yeah, I get discouraged too. But that doesn't mean we have to do the best we can in the world we live in to help people the best we can with the truth. And let the chips fall where they may. And like I said, we're swimming upstream. There's no doubt about that. But with the internet and there's other ways, people are really looking for truth. And if they look at the evidence out there and they try these things, they can let their own bodies speak for themselves. How does it feel when you get up and walk? How does it feel when you have a good night's sleep? How does it feel when you drink water? How does it feel when you eat plants? And the physiology will tell them, you know, this is the truth. You know, this is something maybe you could look at.
Yeah. I mean, and that is, I think, the best point to make is the advantage we have is that it's the truth. Meaning if they do these things, they're going to see dramatic changes that whatever Madison Avenue tells them, all the marketing in the world is not going to change the fact that when they get up every morning, you know, they lack energy, they feel bad, they have these chronic conditions, everything you've described and more.
Right, and that's all we can do is in whatever world we live in. I'm just so thankful for you in St. Louis that you're putting this type of material on the air because, you know, we don't have big budgets. We can't say, listen, we'll give you X amount of dollars if you'll promote what we're saying. So just thank you for putting this out there so people have an alternative view, something that they can look at and think about and weigh the pros and cons of what's being said here versus what the media is hitting them with.
So then let me ask you also, you've told us a little bit about the diet that you would recommend, and perhaps it'd be fair to say that in terms of priority, perhaps there's more emphasis initially on the diet perhaps than the physical exercise. I know both are important, but to the extent that you talk to people about what they should do in terms of the physical side, give us a taste of what that prescription might be.
Well, everyone is so unique. I have some people that are couch potatoes that can't do anything. And for them, I convinced them that we were designed to move, and just moving every hour keeps the parts from getting stiff. When we don't move, we get older quicker. You know, your knees hurt, things get older on the inside, but they get older on the outside. So I just started at least move around the house every hour. Now, for the people that are really into it, we suggest 45 minutes of aerobic exercise, walking, swimming, whatever you like to do, 10 to 15 minutes of light weight, and at least 5 to 10 minutes of stretching every single day. Or at least, if you don't like to do that, just count your steps and try to get up to 10,000 steps. You know, so those are some things that we start, but we really start based on what we think we can be successful with the person. If I give them too much, they're going to give up. They're going to say, no, I can't do that. But if I give them something that I think they can, I said, listen, you know, pray about this, and surely you can get up every hour and walk around the room and stretch everything out and move every part of your body. And if that goes well, why don't you go walking? And you don't have to do it all at once. Maybe we can do 5 minutes at a time or 5 minutes here. Or maybe you can do a treadmill. Or if you're in a radio booth and don't get out of your chair, maybe you can walk around that 2 times every hour. But just get something and realize how important it is for the whole physiology of aging to keep moving the body parts. So that's very important too.
So let me ask you, on the subject of supplements, first of all, do you generally recommend supplements? And if so, can you name a few that you think are especially important?
Well, people need supplements if they have deficiencies, okay? If you don't have deficiencies, supplements aren't going to help you, and they might be detrimental. And the science has shown that. You know, we had beta-carotene that hurt people. It's like having an orchestra. If you have 10,000 French horns are great. But if you have too many, they drown out the instruments. Well, that can happen in the receptor system in the body, too. So I tell people, if you eat a balanced diet with fruits, vegetables, and grains, the only supplements you might need is you might need a vitamin D if you don't get outside, okay? You might need a D3 supplement. Now, I'm in the wintertime. I don't get out much, so I take D3 every day, 2,000 international units a day. If you're a pure plant-based vegan, you might need to take some B6 and B12 as well. Other than that, you should pretty much get everything you need, unless you have a genetic tendency to have a deficiency. So if you go to your doctor and find you have a deficiency, then you might need a supplement. Now, there's some people that need supplements to treat specific medical conditions, okay? Let me explain that. For instance, some people might have a lot of inflammation in the body, okay? Well, they don't have a deficiency, but there's certain herbs that have been shown to be helpful for that. Ginger helps inflammation. Turmeric is another substance that's been scientifically proven to help inflammation. So that's a supplement that's used to treat a specific medical condition. We call that, a nutritional intervention. So there's some foods that lower blood pressure, for instance, like greens. We know flax lowers blood pressure. Hibiscus tea. These are scientific studies that show certain foods lower blood pressure. So people might take these foods instead of a medicine to accomplish the same thing.
Without side effects.
That's correct. For instance, greens are loaded in nitrates. Nitrates in the body get turned to nitric oxide, which makes the arteries bigger, which lowers blood pressure. Also helps fiber, which changes the gut chemistry. You make more butyrate that feeds the good bacteria. You have less inflammatory bacteria. So that can help the whole chemistry of the body as well as start turning around these disease states that we have.
So then, so
that's a very complex question about who should take it. And it really is according to their diet, the medical conditions, and other things.
Yeah, and it's perfectly consistent with what Dr. Colin Campbell, which many of our listeners know of as the China study. I think his latest book was something called, as I recall, Holism with a W-H-O-L.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm going to be with him next weekend. We're meeting together in Houston. So he and I worked together on many projects through the years. We worked on a movie a few years ago together called The Plant Pure Nation.
And oh, yeah,
he's been
yeah.
a very good friend, and I sit on his board. So he's been a very influential person in helping me to understand the importance of nutrition in reversing disease. I haven't always been this way. I used to be the modern medicine all the way type of a physician, but as I've learned, I've incorporated these things into the practice of cardiovascular disease.
Well, that's very impressive, that connection with Dr. Campbell. And Dr. Campbell, in fact, makes this argument, which obviously you know, but it ties in with very perfectly with what you were saying about the fact that foods are really this complex arrangement of hundreds, even thousands of phytochemicals. And presumably they work together in some fashion, like an orchestra. And he argues that whenever you pull out a single component, such as a vitamin, and expect to get the results that you would have if you ate the food, that it's really naive, and it fails to recognize the complexity of nature in the world.
That's correct. And, we think that these single medicine bullets can actually overcome some of this. That's ridiculous, and it just doesn't make sense. But it is very well marketed. So, yes, I have been in that camp for a long period of time, not only because Colin's my friend, but the evidence, the science proves him correct.
Yes, yeah, and overwhelmingly. So then there's the physical activity. There's also eating the proper diet. Something that you hear more and more about is, and this ties in with your discussion, I think, about prayer and worship, is the programs that I've seen, like Dean Ornish's and others, where they've reversed cardiovascular disease. In addition to food and exercise, they've had what they call a sort of meditation component.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, that is so important. And I think as time moves on, we're going to understand that the brain is more important than the food, is more important than the exercise, because the brain is what sort of gets all that going. Mental stress, we know that the three functional layers of the brain work together. The stress part is bad. It ages us. It makes us make poor decisions, so we don't eat well. We know from the studies, especially Dean Ornish, she did a lot of studies out in California about reversing disease. Herb Benson at Harvard and Dusek have done the studies. I'm trying at HeartWise to do a study how this restful relaxation, I'm working on biblical worship, but they've worked on relaxation, how those techniques turn down the stress chemistry of the brain, whether that be deep breathing for 10 minutes or saying a prayer or just breaking away from all of the stress. I'm studying with biblical worship, how that does just 10 minutes a day, how it turns down the stress chemistry, activates the parts of the brain that help us make better decisions, break addictions. But I think as we move forward, we're going to learn more about that type of treatment for not only to treat the problem, but also prevent it from happening. But it's not very well funded. You know, who's going to pay for these things? You know, there's no one making money doing this. So who's going to pay for a worship study that says, you know, 10 minutes of biblical worship lowers the risk of cardiovascular disease, helps you with diabetes, high blood pressure, inflammation, helps you live longer. You know, who's going to pay for those studies? So people have to find out that on their own. We have to get foundations to support that. And, you know, we have lone people out there that are trying to promote this. But yes, I think we're going to learn when it's all through and done that the brain is one of the most vital things to our health.
And you know, it's one of those soft sides of health versus the more tangible hard side that is much easier to sell to a lot of people, in myself included. My personality is such that you give me a prescription for activity, you give me a prescription for certain things to eat, you know, that I can measure and see and hold, so to speak. And then when you talk to me though about a mindfulness or these different forms of meditation, and even prayer, while I recognize the importance of prayer, it's hard for me to connect that in the tangible way. And I think that the reality, as you point out, is that it is kind of the third leg to the stool. And until people acknowledge that, the first two legs, the stool's not going to stand on its own. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I agree totally. In fact, our ministry, Heartwise Ministry, is coming out with an app within the next month where people can actually have this app and they can have 10 minutes of worship that comes to their cell phone every day. And I try to explain the neurophysiology of worship, of how when we worship, the studies have shown the parts of the brain, the anterior cingulate cortex grows, the stress chemistry is turned down. I try to show the physiology that happens in worship. So, you know, so worship changes the physiology much more than a pill will, and here's the science to prove it. And as people see the evidence, oh, yeah, I can do 10 minutes, you know, sure. I can stretch out, take my deep breaths, do this relaxation thing for 10 minutes to improve my health. I can do that. So if you give people bite-sized things that they can do, show them science behind it, I think that's going to be the next step in getting more people involved in this. And I'm hoping to publish a study within the soon to show that biblical intervention is a treatment for chronic disease.
That is great. And it's exciting stuff. So here in just the last few moments we have left, I want people to again hear these best resources that you suggest they go to get information about healthy eating and exercise.
Well, yeah, that's great. Well, if people want to get in touch with me or what we do in reversing disease, the site is heartwiseministries.org. heartwiseministries.org. And actually, our ministry has a bevy of physicians that we answer people's questions for free. We don't give specific information, but we say, in general, I would do this. This might be an alternative you talk to your doctor about. This might be a way to get off the pill, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a free service we give at heartwiseministries.org. They can also download all the radio programs we're doing that month and be a part of what we're doing. They can get the worship app if they're interested in 10 minutes of biblical worship. All this is free. No charge at all, okay? If they're interested in growing spiritually, we do have a 7-week Bible study they can get involved. The best sources for nutrition.
We're about out of time.
Yeah. The best, nutritionfacts.org and plantpurenation.com, where I go for nutrition.
Dr. James Markham, wonderful information. I hope that we can talk you into coming on the show in the future.
I would love to, and next time I'll have a landline for you.
Great. This has been Elder Talk. Hope this helped you. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.